I think God's trying to tell me something. There is a recurring message I am hearing from books and guests on this program that we feature, and one of them is the idea that I am limited. I can't do everything, and neither can you. Our guest today on Chris Fabry Live says, your limits reflect God's design, and that's good news. He also believes we need to stop asking forgiveness when we can't do everything and ask forgiveness for ever imagining we could. Dr. Kelly Capick will join us today at the Radio Backyard Fence. He is at Moody Bible Institute for a theological lectureship, so he's speaking to students. He spoke this morning with the question, have I done enough? Tonight he's addressing, what does God think of me? And tomorrow, why doesn't God instantly change me? Have you ever asked those questions? We'll go deal with some of that here on the program today. Thanks for joining us. We thank our team, Ryan McConaughey doing all things technical. Tricia's our producer. Gabby Teed's in the chair. Anthony will be answering your calls today. Two other team members, Teddy and Lois. Teddy and Lois got online. They went to chrisfabrylive.org and they invested in this continuing conversation. And they did it for the very first time. I know they've got a star beside Teddy's name and Lois right there. Thank you, Teddy and Lois. How about you? Do you appreciate the daily encouragement you get here? Call or click through. And as a thank you, we have a fantastic resource, a hardback, beautifully illustrated copy of Philip Keller's A Shepherd Looks at the Psalm 23. I want to send you this timeless classic. Call 866-95-FABRY or go to the website chrisfabrylive.org. You'll see how you can be a friend or partner. And it'll be so encouraging to hear from you. And if it's for the very first time, we'll put a star right next to your name. Join Teddy and Lois today. Or maybe it's been a while since you reached out. Would love to hear from you. chrisfabrylive.org or 866-953-2279. Dr. Kelly Capick is professor of theological studies at Covenant College in Lookout Mountain, Georgia, near Chattanooga, where he has taught for 20 years. He's an award-winning author of more than 15 books. He's worked on research team funded by the John Templeton Foundation. I wonder how I can get in on that. featured resource today is You're Only Human, How Your Limits Reflect God's Design and Why That's Good News. Dr. Capick, welcome. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
I am glad you're here because I told you before we started, there is this nerve that is being touched on the limit. We feel like we're unlimited, you know, we're limitless in everything that we can do, but we are limited and we come back to the, why did you write, there must have been something going on in you a couple years ago.
Yeah, no, this is all hypothetical for me. I can't relate to this at all. there's some theological reasons and some personal existential ones. Maybe for your listeners, the more interesting would be the existential. And without, you know, given a long history here, my wife and I got married in 1993, and in 2008, she got cancer, and she was still in her 30s, and we had two young kids, and it's normally the kind of cancer that a woman in her 70s might get. And long story short, a year later, she was declared cancer-free after surgeries and that kind of thing, and we thought, praise God, that was really hard, but we got through it. And then the next year, and we had trimmed down our life to deal with these things, and then the summer of 2010, she developed pretty severe chronic pain and fatigue that from the day it developed in that summer to this day, over 12 years or 14 years, whatever it is, there's never been a day without pain and fatigue. And so we thought we had trimmed down. We had to keep cutting more and more. And dealing with pain, you know, finitude or limits is not something you tend to study and then it convinces you. It's more like your life hits a wall. And so that's part of it is, with her encouragement, I ended up writing on suffering. And then after that, I felt like I could finally write about the goodness of being a human. And part of the goodness is having limits, and which we'll talk about today.
Yes. See, and everybody wants to read books about pain and suffering when it ends, you know,
yeah.
when there's resolution and when you give me the five steps or take me to YouTube for the hack where I can get through this and alleviate everything, or give me the pill or the herb or the natural essential oil, you know, all of that.
Oh, yeah, I got stories, man. Everyone sent us stuff.
I bet they did. But you have to live it. It's you have a quote here by Kierkegaard, and I think of the quote by him about how you understand your life looking back at it, but you have to live it forward. And that's really what you're in the middle of, right?
Yeah. Just trying to navigate, you know, what, and part of what lingers in all of this is, what does God actually expect of us? And we don't tend to ask that question. And I now encourage people to think, what does God expect of you to do in a day or in a week or in a lifetime? And we don't tend to think through that, but we live with unspoken expectations. And part of it gets complicated is parental expectations, cultural expectations. It all gets fueled in there, but we tend to project it onto God without realizing it. And so part of what's going on here is, without us knowing it, this really has to do with your view of, what is God like? What is he good? Is he just a taskmaster? Is God just really want to get a bunch done and he needs you to keep up with it and he's pretty disappointed you're not keeping up? Or is there actually something more beautiful going on?
And if you don't do it, then, you know, he's dependent on you. And if you drop the ball, you know, he's not going to be able to. He's got to go to plan B, you know, if that's your
view of God. Yeah, or he's just
going to
get someone who's stronger, you know, faster, smarter, more beautiful, whatever it is. And that just does not sound like the gospel at all. It doesn't sound like Jesus at all. But we, it's not just kind of culture, quote unquote. It's in the church, there is this sense of, we'll put it this way, you know, when was the last time you put your head on your pillow at night and thought, you know, I really prayed as much as I should have, and I read my Bible as much as I should have, and I really excelled, I really crushed it at work, right? And I was great, I got the physical exercise I needed, and I was with my kids as much as I needed, I was fully present with them, and the list goes on and on. Like, that never happens. For me, often at night, I just feel this wave of guilt and shame, and it was often related to this voice, Kelly, why didn't you do more today? Why didn't you get more done? And so as a theologian, I finally, took me a long time to go, wait, is that what God wants me to think? Is it just, I need to get more done? And so, yeah, trying to think through what is this God actually like? And what is the faithful life, especially in a world, in the Western world, where we're driven by efficiency? Maybe efficiency isn't God's highest value.
And productivity.
Exactly.
And
I love productivity.
Oh, well, that's why we have the internet, right?
Well, and it's interesting because I think productivity and efficiency are good things, and I think God cares about them, but they're not his highest value. And what's happened is they, even in the church, they've often become the highest value. But the problem is productivity and efficiency are often the enemy of love. And you know, you can feel it when someone is driven by productivity and efficiency, you tend not to feel love in their presence. You tend to feel like you're distracting them, that's a problem. And so part of what we have to think through in the church is to make sure we're examining what's going on in our hearts, what are our values, what in what way are we being shaped without realizing it? And the last thing I'll say on this, Christians and non-Christians agree, we are exhausted. We're all too busy. But the part that I'm most concerned about is the Christian response has been almost the exact same one as the non-Christian. And that is, oh, you know what we need? Better time management. And I don't think this is a time management problem fundamentally. I think it's a theological and pastoral problem. And that's what I want to help us think through.
I am looking forward to this because from the very beginning, the title of the first chapter is Have I Done Enough? Which is what he spoke in chapel about today. But the very first quote of Kierkegaard is, the result of busyness is that an individual is very seldom permitted to form a heart.
Yeah.
And if you can't do that, you know, if we're so convinced that we have to be productive and we got to do this, and for good reason, you got to reach the world, reach the lost, or whatever it is that you've been given to do, you know, it's a good thing. It's a good goal to have. But what is happening to our hearts in the middle of that? So we're going to talk about that with Dr. Kelly Kapic. K-A-P-I-C is how you spell his last name. You're Only Human is our featured resource today. How your limits reflect God's design and why that's good news. Put on your thinking cap, your theological cap, and the cap of your heart, and we'll continue straight ahead. If you go to chrisfabrylive.org and click through today's information, you'll see information about Dr. Kelly Kapic, K-A-P-I-C. You're Only Human is our featured resource today, and I've been going dipping into this book, and I've been looking forward to having him on the program because I think he's speaking from the overflow of what he has been studying and what he's been living. I should ask before we go on, so your wife is still in pain, but is it manageable? Is it, where is she on the continuum of, you know, if she was cancer-free at some point and now she's where she is now, still pain every day?
Yeah, it's only indirectly related to cancer at best, but the reality is if you saw her, she's beautiful and looks great, and she doesn't like to draw attention to it. And so there's no clear appearance. But the reality is there's never a day without pain, never a day without fatigue. It's just some days are worse than others. So it's we've long moved past the idea of, you know, sometimes Christians struggle with this. This is another conversation to get into the suffering. But Christians mean well, and like, we're praying for your healing. But it's interesting, and some of your listeners who deal with chronic pain and some of these things will understand this. I'm happy for Christians to pray for her healing, but don't actually tell us. Because without meaning to, it just starts to sound cruel. Part of what can happen is it really is a version of, if you drink this coconut juice or if you just pray right, you're going to be healed. And the reality is if you get an arm cut off, the church stops praying for that arm to grow back. And so some of these things are just, this is where reality is. So I often encourage people, hey, pray that we don't lose faith. Pray, don't pray for, I mean, you can pray for healing, just not with us there. But also pray that we don't lose heart and that we don't start thinking God is cruel or indifferent. Pray that we recognize the Father is compassionate and present with us by his Spirit. Pray for our faith. Pray for God to continue to use us, those kind of things. The goal is not just healing the side of glory. The goal is faith, hope, and love.
Isn't that where we, and I'm thinking that the places where the church is being persecuted right now, I think China, the people in China and the pastors in those house churches in China have said the same thing. Don't pray that we won't be persecuted. I mean, go ahead and pray that if you want to, but pray that we'll be faithful.
Yeah.
Pray that we'll be able to bear up under the weight of what we're facing. That's the same thing that you're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's related to what's the good life? What's the faithful life? And sometimes we confuse the biblical vision of the flourishing or the good life with the American dream, and they're not the same. The goal is increased communion and love for God, increased love for your neighbor, and a healthy, right relationship to the rest of creation. That's pointing back to the goodness of creation. And in glory, when ultimately we're free from sin and pain, that's just going to be exploding in beauty and goodness. So, yeah, I just think it's a bit of a different vision rather than just the absence of challenge, something like that.
And I've been going through the book of Acts and looking at what happened in the, you know, the time right after the resurrection, the ascension, and what happened in the early church and the explosion, you know, people coming to Christ. And then what happens? It's persecution. It's scattered. You know, it's like, God, take this around the world. Mm. And he did, but not the way that they wanted it necessarily. But his plan was what was being worked out in the midst of the pain.
Yeah. And even some of that vision, as you talk about Acts, relates kind of connecting these two of suffering and you know, our limits. It's so fascinating to me as the gospel starts spreading in Acts. And the good news of the resurrection takes root, people just immediately start sharing their things, which is fascinating. Sometimes Christians are like, what is it, communism or something? Socialism? What's going on? It's like, no, actually, that's pointing back to the garden and it's pointing forward to the new creation. And the idea is we were always made to depend on God and to depend on each other and to depend on the earth. And so experiencing the Spirit and living under the resurrected King, we start to again recognize our dependence on each other. And a consequence of that is we share, including our material things. We share our lives. We get reconnected to creation in certain kinds of ways, not in any problematic way, but in a, like, we recognize this is a gift from the Creator. So it's interesting how these things go together, that actually growing in faith can grow and grows our ability to recognize how dependent we are on God and dependent on others and even on the earth.
But we don't like that. And maybe it is the American thing, you know, maybe the rugged individualism that we're going to pull ourselves up and all of that. Maybe that's part of the thing. But I think there is this innate sense inside that if I can do something myself, I want to do that. I want to depend on somebody else. I can do this myself. Yeah. And there's a certain amount of esteem that you, you know, if I can do this myself. But we forget that interconnectedness that we have with each other and then obviously with God. Your quote again at the beginning of the book, many of us fail to understand that our limitations are a gift from God and therefore good. This produces in us the burden of trying to be something we are not and cannot be. Mm. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny if you ask, do you think you're God? We all say like, of course I'm not God. But we live with the burden of thinking we are. Like the weight of the world is on us. Well, here's just a concrete example, right? One of the things I ended up thinking through on this research and experientially is sleep. I actually think sleep is a spiritual discipline. And what I mean by that is think about, you know, if you're on the front lines of a military endeavor, unless you have another soldier with you watching your back, you can never sleep. How can you sleep if you're an unchristian when you just feel the weight of the world and you're the one who has to keep this thing going? But actually, as Christians, every night, right, we are reminded, now I lay my head down to sleep, the Lord my soul to keep, right? If I die before I wake. But there is a sense of which every night we're reminded, no, I'm trusting you, God. You hold this together. And it's a reminder, I matter, but I'm just a very small part of this. So it sleep, spiritual discipline, even like this 1 in 7 rhythm of work really hard and rest, that there's something beautiful about it. And the one other thing I was going to say is just like, think about this. You know, if you and I have been spending some time together and people say, hey, what's Chris like? And I say, well, Sir Chris, as we like to call him, inside joke there. But if I said, listen, Sir Chris, if Chris is a good guy, but he seems like he's dependent on a lot of people. In our culture, that's never a compliment.
Right.
So how in the world do you develop Christian disciples and discipleship when fundamental to discipleship in a biblical sense is growing in your dependence on God, a healthy dependence on neighbor and the creation? And I think this is a particular challenge for us because what's central to discipleship is now viewed as bad or weakness in a problematic way. So we have to rethink this. Our limits are not something we always have to overcome. I understand it's this, you know, in sports and other things and innovation, of course we push against limits. We could nuance all of those things, but ultimately I have a body. I can only be in one place at a time. I only know so much. My brain is different than someone else's brain. So we have to think through, let me just make sure I make this point. The idea of limits, part of the goodness of how God made us is they are what draw us to God, to each other, and his earth. And it's not, sin did not make us dependent on other people. Sin did not make us dependent on other people. Sin twists the dependencies. Hmm. It distorts them, it perverts them. But it's not what makes us dependent. And so part of the gospel and the Spirit's working is getting healthy, life-giving, loving dependence back.
You reminded me of this. I mentioned the shepherd looks at Psalm 23. Mm. In that classic, Philip Keller talks about there are 4 things that will keep sheep from lying down. And I won't go through that. But he says, sheep do not just take care of themselves, as some might suppose. They require, more than any other class of livestock, endless attention and meticulous care. And that's the good shepherd. Mm. We were made to depend on him.
Yeah.
And we give ourselves credit when we act in ways, I give myself credit when I act in ways where I supply my own, you know, need, when I'm really productive on my own, and I don't realize how dependent I am on him to be right there to put me beside quiet waters and to give me a little rest.
Yeah, that's good. And, you know, sometimes listeners might think like, okay, yes, I should be dependent. What does that even mean? So maybe concrete example would help. I actually think a way to foster this in our lives is to cultivate gratitude and lament. Gratitude and lament. Those sound different, but they're actually two sides of the same coin. So let's start with lament. Lament is, 40% of the Psalms are made up of what we would call lament. Laments are questions like, why, God? Where were you, God? Frustrations, expressions of those things. And it's interesting, as evangelicals, we're often very uncomfortable with lament. It feels, if in your small group during prayer time, someone in your prayer group says, they pray, my God, why have you forsaken me? Afterwards, we're probably going to pull them aside and say, hey, are you all right? Like, are you not believing or something like that? And the reality is, as you know, that's a quote from the Psalms, and it's a quote on the very lips of Jesus on the cross. So what sounds like a lack of faith in lament is surprisingly an act of faith. Now, you don't lament to a God you don't think exists. You don't get frustrated with a God who you don't care about or indifferent to. It's actually a sign of like, God, what's going on? I actually know you're sovereign, and I'm struggling to see how your goodness is found here. So lament allows you to be honest with God about the genuine nature of how hard things are in the world and your life. But that actually is a sign of you depending on God. But the flip side is also gratitude. Gratitude, you mentioned the John Templeton Foundation stuff. Part of it is there's been a bunch of work on gratitude. And this stuff partly makes me nervous as a theologian, but you can make people do a gratitude journal for 30 days. And listeners, you can try this. Just as simple as write down 5 things every day that you're grateful for. And it can be like a crisp apple. Someone said something nice to you in the grocery store, right? 5 things, try and make them different every day. And you can find at the end of those 30 days, people's blood pressure goes down. People actually sleep a little longer, which makes me nervous as a theologian. But in another sense, it's like, no, God made us in this way. And what's interesting is by doing that practice, sometimes you're like, I don't know if I can find 5 things. It's just you're not looking. God is gracious. God is present. He is working. All that kind of thing does is it starts to alert you to how much there is to be grateful for. And it starts to, and both of those, lament and gratitude, help cultivate an awareness of divine presence and a dependence on him. And we desperately need that in an age of distraction and an age of endless busyness.
But we can even twist that because I'm still thinking of your wife and, it's the gratitude thing, 30 days, you're going to feel better. Your pain's going to go away. And it's like, no, that's not the point. The point is not to fix or get rid of whatever it is. And I hope people in pain get out of that.
Right.
It's to understand the depth of love and care and compassion that your Heavenly Father has for you and the interdependence we have. See, my guess is that the situation with your wife over the last dozen years plus has caused you and your whole family to see the care of God, not only from himself, from his hand, and see these little things that go on, but also from the people around you, the church, the body, right?
Yeah. And I mean, here's an example where the Black church has so much to teach us. So on an average Sunday in many Black churches and other churches, but they've just been very faithful in this. It's very common whether a preacher is preaching or someone's given a testimony that in the midst of them talking, congregation members will say, testify or witness, right? Well, what's going on when you actually pay attention in that setting? It's normally twofold. On the one hand, someone can be sharing like, this is how bad things are. This is how hard things are. And when the congregation says testify or witness, what they're saying is, I see it's really as bad as you think it is. And so you're not insane. And yet, they will also say, and yet in the midst of that, but God, and God showed up. And it's hard to believe when things are really hard to think God's there. But the congregation's like, no, I see him too. And I think as Christians, we're constantly tempted to lie. And we're tempted to lie either about how complicated and hard the world is, and Christianity becomes very cheesy and plastic. Or we're tempted to lie about how good God is. And if we're going to be honest about how broken and hard our world is in our lives, then we're going to say negative things about God, or if we're going to say how truly good and beautiful and faithful God is, then we're going to have to make our lives plastic. And the Bible doesn't require us to choose between those. It says, be as honest as you can be about what you're really seeing and experiencing, and be as honest as you can be, because God is good and faithful, and he will bring to completion what he began.
Because he wants your heart. Yeah. You know, the quote, the beginning, we can't form a heart if we're always busy.
Mm.
And these limitations that God has given us are dragging us kicking and screaming to who we really are instead of who we thought we were going to be. So let me take a quick break. 877-548-3675. Respond to what we're talking about today with Dr. Kelly Capick. Your Only Humans are featured resource at chrisfabrylive.org. You cannot do everything. You were not meant to save the world. You were not meant to meet every need. We're talking with Dr. Kelly Capick today. I want to mention the ministry of CareNet in relation to all of this. Many who are pro-life with a passion inside, they have a conviction about the dignity of the unborn and that this is a human rights issue, if not more. But other than lamenting what's happening in the culture, what do you do with that? That's why CareNet began their church engagement initiative and the program Making Life Disciples. What if your church could be a lighthouse of life to your community? No, you can't do everything. But if you click the green CareNet button at chrisfabrylive.org, there may be a redemptive step that you can take to show compassion, hope, and help to those who are considering abortion, who don't see any other way out. Click the green CareNet button today at chrisfabrylive.org. Again, chrisfabrylive.org. Dr. Kelly Capick is with us. He's at Moody Bible Institute speaking today and tomorrow to the students, and I wanted you to hear from him. The book that we're talking about is Your Only Human, and the very first chapel message was, Have I Done Enough? We've talked about the whole idea of being exhausted. You're talking to college students, Moody students, who have this syllabus, who have to read these pages, who have to do all these papers. They have reading assignments that they can't finish if they do, you know. I'm sure they're resonating with this, right?
Oh, yeah. And as a college professor myself, this is the world they live in. But it's also the world you and I live in, right? This, the endless expectations.
The endless information. This is what gets me with doing a program like this, because I feel guilty sometimes having a conversation that feels so easy like this when I could be talking about name the spot on the globe, name the issue,
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I shouldn't. And I, yeah. It's like, just do what you're doing. Just be who you are. Be all here with this conversation. Mm. It's going to, and I think that's, you're freeing us up. When you realize your limitations, it frees you up. And it frees other people. I got an email yesterday. Here's a great opportunity. Chris, we'd like you to come, et cetera, et cetera. and this was a wonderful thing. And I've done it before. I know it can do it. And I looked at the calendar and it's like the very next month I'm doing this. And the very next month after that, I'm doing that. And I thought, wisdom says, you know, in myself, I want to go do this. You know, so it's like, it'd be a wonderful opportunity. But as I looked at it, wisdom said, no, you're going to tax yourself. You're not going to be, going to be all there for you, your family or anything else. If you do that, it's going to be a cost to you. So I said no to it. And then I realized that realizing my limitations freed somebody else to go in another direction. And I didn't have to stew over it for a month and say, well, what about, you know, that kind of, no. Just say no to that. That frees somebody else up. That's part of what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. And as you and I both know, you know, the messianic complex, the idea, none of us would say we're Messiah, but, you know, especially those in ministry, we can feel like there is a need. And if there's a need and I see it, I must be the one to meet it. And, you know, if you remember nothing else from this conversation, I'd encourage listeners to think through this line, but that is finitude is not sin. Finitude is a fancy word for limits, or from a Christian perspective, creature, right? Finitude is limits in space, time, knowledge, and power. Finitude's not sin. The fact that you, Chris, can't be everywhere doesn't mean you've done something wrong. And part of it is when we have the faith not to meet a need, part of that faith is that God will raise someone else up to do it. And that's a good thing. As most people know, 15 to 20% of the people in any church do almost all the work. And there's all kinds of reasons, but everyone knows it's better if it was 50% of the people did all the work, right? And some of it is people need to step up, but some of it is some of us have to stop filling the vacuum immediately and let others step in. And that's hard.
That takes faith.
It takes faith, yeah.
Okay, Mark is in Illinois. Mark, why did you call today?
Well, this may surprise you, but I'm calling to express thanks for my blindness, and maybe more precisely for results that it has brought about. But I'll only give you three or four of them because I know you have limited time. But it was expressed by a graduate student that I knew at Wheaton College. I told him about a letter or a card that author Sheldon Benachon had written to me, and he equated thankfulness with powers of observation, and I said, I learned from his thoughts to be especially attentive to what people are doing for me because I may not see it all. And so I really go out of my way to find what people are doing to be thankful for. And this graduate student said, if this has had that effect on you, everybody should be blind.
Mm. Wow.
Now, here are the three things. First of all, it was a lot harder in my teen years to have a know-it-all attitude because I was dependent on other people to read information from restaurant menus or to find other information for me. And therefore, I always knew that I didn't know it all. The second thing is that because women mostly treated me with helpfulness and concern, I developed a very platonic attitude towards women long before puberty. I regarded them as people you could be friends with. And that has meant that it's been easy for me to be a contented single and to regard women for their personhood. And then the third thing, and I would not have asked for this role, but I think that I played a role in softening my father's heart because my father believed in eugenics. And one practical outcome of that was that when anybody disagreed with him, he assumed that it was because they had an inferior brain. Now, that meant that he was hard for many people to live with. But I think that having a son who was partially sighted, and then 4 years ago I turned totally blind, I think having a son who was partially sighted and yet regarded as very bright and having musical talent and perfect pitch, I think that he was forced to reconsider his views on genetics. And that may have had a role in softening his heart a little bit.
So again, you have just entertained this idea of thankfulness not to say that blindness isn't hard. You're not saying that, you know, it's a walk in the park. No, it's not. It's a struggle, but God is in the middle of that. What do you say to that, Kelly?
I say that's amazing what you just said. That was a mic drop when you said thankfulness is related to powers of observation. I just wish we would all spend the week thinking about that statement because you're exactly right. But it's so hard for us to observe in a world of distraction. And yeah, that's just super insightful.
Yeah. Again, Dr. Kelly Capick, thank you, Mark, for your call today. You're only human. Well, this makes me think of Jesus, and I know it's very thin ice that we're walking on here because we're talking about a theological, the hypostatic union, 100% God, 100% man. But Jesus limited himself, Philippians 2, limited himself to as a human being to one space, you know, where in the manger, no place to lay his head when he's walking with the disciples. And the thing that I see in his life is I don't see hurry. I don't see, you know, I'm really busy here, guys, don't bother me. The kids are coming. No, keep them away. No, he welcomes them. there is this sense that Jesus modeled this perfectly for us, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. And the very fact of incarnation, that the Son of God became human, that very reality is just transformative when we think about it. In the ancient church, there was an early church father named Tertullian. And in one of his sermons, which is it's called On the Flesh of Christ, it's interesting. He starts talking about Mary's afterbirth. And you're like, hey, man, is that appropriate to use in a sermon? Like, this is super. But his point was, there were a lot of people that were hesitant to affirm the full divinity of Christ because of his earthiness. And what Tertullian understood is that the creator is not different than the recreator. The creator loves what he made. And so God, the Father, sends the Son in the power of the Spirit to become fully human. And when he's talking about Mary's afterbirth, he's saying to these Gnostics at the time, what you think is disgusting, God thinks is beautiful.
Yes.
And you're like super uncomfortable, but until you understand the full humanity, Jesus is not plain. It's not a puppet. Jesus is fully human. He slept, right? He had to use the restroom. If he ate something with food poisoning, it turned his stomach. Rather than making that nervous in our faith, once you start to soak in that, you start to realize, wow, this God is so much more beautiful and loving than I ever understood. This God, as Hebrews says, really in Christ is a sympathetic high priest, right? So think about this. Hebrews says that we have this sympathetic high priest who, you know, tempted in every way as we are. Well, think about, that's kind of weird because you're like, wait, God knows everything. God knows everything. So he would know what is to be tempted. So why does the fact that the Son becomes incarnate matter? And what's interesting is God has always known everything, but he knew it as God. When the Son becomes human, he now knows it from the human side. He knows what it's like to have friends let him down. He knows physical pain. He knows how long it takes to walk from one city to another. He knows all of it, not just as God, because God knows everything, but now he knows it from the human side. That's amazing. That's the kind of God we're talking about.
And the place where I always go to this is the tomb of Lazarus.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, and that Jesus weeps. He doesn't say, hey, everybody, you know, perk up because it's look at what I'm going to do, you know.
Yeah.
He weeps with them. And those are not, like you say, a puppet. Those aren't crocodile tears. He's not just putting on here. This is deep grief over the man, and then the grief of those who love him that are around, and Jesus loved him too, but just the anger that was there about what has been twisted, like you talked about a little earlier.
Yeah.
That's what he's going through, and it resonates all the way through him and comes out as tears. Isn't that great?
Oh, it's amazing. And, you know, there was an early, end of the 19th, early 20th century theologian who was at Princeton at the time, a guy named B.B. Warfield. And he was super intellectual. You would probably think of him as not a very emotional kind of person. And he wrote one of the most insightful essays ever called The Emotional Life of Our Lord. And it doesn't make sense. How could this guy, who's kind of enlightenment rationalist, write so insightfully on emotions? Well, because he got married to this young woman, and they went to Germany for their honeymoon, and they were in Schwarzwald in these mountains, and we don't know exactly what happened, but a terrible thunderstorm. But all we know is from that point to the end of her life, she was basically bedridden. And he never, so she lived in Princeton. He could have toured the world. He could have done all that. He didn't. He stayed. He was her primary caregiver. So this rationalist in his own life had to learn the depth and gamut of human emotions. And then he starts exploring the Gospels and sees how Jesus takes on all these sinless emotions and explores the compassion of Christ. There's something very powerful about that. So, yeah, I think we can lean into this and not be nervous. This is a beautiful, if you want to understand what it means to be limited and that's not sinful, you've got to look at Christ to start making sense of it.
That's Dr. Kelly Kapic, K-A-P-I-C. You'll find out more about him at chrisfabrylive.org. His book is You're Only Human, How Your Limits Reflect God's Design and Why That's Good News. Again, you can find out more at the website, chrisfabrylive.org. More straight ahead on Moody Radio. Are you identifying with what Dr. Capick has been talking about today? When you put your head on the pillow tonight and you ask yourself, have I done enough? When you put your head on the pillow, are you going to be thinking about all the things that you didn't do, all the things that you did halfway? Oh, I could have done this. I could have made that phone call. How do you know if you've done enough? We're talking about You're Only Human. I think you'll be encouraged by the book. It's our featured resource. Linda is on the line from Chicago. Linda, why did you call today?
Hi. I called because I have been trying to deal with a problem with my aunt for about 2 weeks, and everything that I have done has not resolved the problem. Hmm. So just today, I said, I didn't pray about this and ask God, you know, for direction of how I need to work on this problem. So that's why I wanted to call, because I think that's what's being said, that, you know, we try to do things on our own, but we don't actually acknowledge God and when we have, you know, problem situations in our lives. Mm. So that's...
I'm glad you called, Linda. That's a very practical thing. You want a certain outcome with your aunt, I think you said, and you're asking God to do that, and you're trying to do that all you can. Mm. So how do you, Kelly, what do you do?
Well, I love that Linda said that because, you know, again, ask most of us Christians, hey, do you think you pray as much as you should? We're like, no, of course not. But we all pray because we know we're supposed to. So we go in, we get in and get out as quick as you can. Right? So no one gets hurt. And what I mean by that is, because if you actually go and pray, you wonder, is there anyone actually there listening? So I'm just going to do it, right? But so I'll say one of the reasons I think we don't default to prayer that we are uncomfortable admitting, and that's because we feel like it's a waste of time, right? It's not efficient. It's better to just try and, like Linda's saying, try and solve it ourselves. And what's interesting is, no, prayer is not efficient. Prayer is time with the Father. But God does things in our hearts, in the world. And so, yes, that cultivating that prayerfulness, that sense of constantly, prayer isn't just on our knees. Prayer isn't just a certain time of day. Prayer is moving about this world in God's presence. It can be a word. It can be a sentence. But actually, I think prayer is related to this. Prayer is a way of cultivating this recognition of our dependence on God, yes. And he's the provider.
Yes. So an outcome that she might want to have with her relative could be a very good thing, but there's two involved here and you don't control the other person.
Exactly.
And so you have to step back in some ways, you know, do all you can in a sense. But I hear that denigration about prayer all the time. It says, well, don't need your thoughts and prayers anymore. You know, we need action here. As if prayer is not something that is being productive. You know, you're not doing anything with it.
Right.
And I think it's one of the most powerful things you can do when you say, my reliance is totally on him in this situation. Do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. And sometimes we'll say, when we're worried about that because we don't feel like prayer does anything, then we'll just say, well, what really matters is prayer changes us. I do think prayer can change us. But prayer is not just a psychological exercise. This is the living God, and he does do things. Not maybe what we think, but he's responsive. He's working, and this relationship is cultivated.
I asked a question earlier. We haven't gotten to it. I'm going to do it here before we end. We need to stop asking for God's forgiveness when we can't do everything, and we need to ask forgiveness for ever imagining we could. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're just asking, like, what do we mean by this?
Well, yeah, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, I don't think we actually tend to use the words, God, forgive me for not being able to be everywhere. But we feel a lot of guilt and shame that we can't take our kids to every event, that we're not getting every book read. Like, I'm sure you, as a host, like, you can't read every book for everybody you interview. Like, and so part of it is, God, I don't need to be there constantly every moment for my children. So what does faithfulness look like? And we've got to think about faithfulness as creatures rather than faithfulness of God. And so we have to ask for forgiveness that we thought we can control our children's lives, right? That we could always be there. We could always make sure everything goes perfect. No. we need to ask forgiveness that we thought we could control our children's lives, that we could protect them from everything, that we could reign and rule in a way that only King Jesus can. Yeah. So
that's very helpful. And I hope you'll continue to write and come back again and talk about the suffering book that you wrote.
I'd love to.
Yeah, because that hits everybody's life. We've only scratched the surface. We went into like a couple of pages in the first chapter, folks. So if you want more, go to the website, chrisfabrylive.org. You're Only Human is the title, How Your Limits Reflect God's Design and Why That's Good News. I wanted to tell you that Sarah called from Ohio, and she said, I heard him the other day at our university. He was great. She's given you affirmation, that words of affirmation.
Oh, so, that's kind.
And I'm going to give you a cup of coffee. Okay?
Thank you, sir.
Again, that's Dr. Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y, Kapic, K-A-P-I-C. I didn't ask you where that name comes from. What is that?
It's Polish. And when great-great-grandparents went to Canada, like in New York, they cut it off. It was like Kapikowski. Really? Yeah. It would have been cooler as Kapikowski.
It would have been. But then, you know, I think Kapik in Georgia, is not Stone Mountain, it's Lookout Mountain.
Yeah,
right?
Lookout Mountain. Yep.
Okay, so make it as simple as you can for everybody.
So my brother said if it was Kapikowski, we'd be hockey players. So.
And you wouldn't have as many teeth as you have, too.
That's true.
All right, folks, go to chrisfabrylive.org. Your Only Human is our featured resource right there at the website. And I got a special friend coming along with us tomorrow who's going through a trial. We talked about suffering. Ray Pritchard will be here on Chris Fabry Live, production of Moody Radio, a ministry of Moody Bible Institute.